Hi, this is State Representative Chris Turner from Grand Prairie. Today's been a big day. I got to introduce the pastor of the day, got elected Democratic Caucus Chair, and now I get to introduce the TripCast. Well, two out of three ain't bad. Welcome to the TripCast, where it's always business as usual.
Thank you, Representative Turner. This is Reeve Hamilton here with the TripCast for the final week of January. Obviously, that introduction was recorded yesterday, Tuesday. We're recording this on Wednesday, the day after Perry's State of the State and Chris Turner's election to Democratic Caucus Chair. Joining me is CEO and Editor-in-Chief of the Texas Tribune, Evan Smith.
Hello, Reeve.
Executive Editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Editor Emily Ramshaw.
There was a little pause there. Did you forget?
I was thinking if I should add a word before editor.
How about diversity for a change on the podcast?
I think the way that
diversity
we...
editor?
Diversity no, I mean, for a change
diversity
editor.
Diversity for a change editor, Emily Ramshaw.
This podcast is okay. So old white male.
It is. I'm not old white male.
As old
other
as
than
people
Reef.
Think.
Yeah, now that Reeve 19.
Right. Your picture only makes you look 8.
So any thoughts on Chris Turner becoming the Democratic Caucus Chair while we have him on the line?
You know, it's confusing that they have so many leaders over there. They have a chair, they have a leader. It's hard to tell who's the head person in charge.
Well, apparently it's Von Davis, to my amazement.
You know,
How did Yvonne Davis get elected chair of the Democratic
and
Caucus?
And I can't wait.
She's not the chair. Turner is the chair. Of the
well,
Democratic
who the hell
Caucus.
Cares?
She's the leader.
She's the leader. Whatever she, whatever she is.
What's the difference
the grand
between the leader?
Poobah, okay?
What's the difference between the
How'd
leader?
How'd she get
no,
elected
no, no, no,
poobah?
No. I think Anchia is the grand poobah.
What?
No, I'm just kidding. You know, there's a scene in Diner where they're all sitting around arguing. Sinatra or Mathis.
Sinatra,
and
yeah.
Mickey Rourke walks up and they say Sinatra or Mathis, and he says Presley. I had this thing yesterday. Wally or Herrero. Yvonne Davis is Elvis Presley. I was like, what?
Yvonne Davis is wow. Elvis just, Presley. That is, was
you're out there on your own metaphor, buddy.
Am I?
Yeah. Ross takes one to no one.
Yeah, seriously. You're going to lecture me on metaphors? Well, holy crap.
That was a very original analysis.
But that was my first thought. Was like
Yvonne Davis is Elvis Presley?
Yvonne Davis is Elvis Presley.
All right, so is it a prerequisite to be
she
a leader of the Democratic Party?
She was in there punching windows for a smile.
Does that mean that she is going to start talking publicly to the media?
I think
or,
that
the,
would
or
be,
specifically to the Tribune
or to anyone.
To anyone. That would be really something.
We should
it?
Say who she is. I mean, she's a representative.
She's a representative from Davis and she
what?
Is Davis. I mean representative from Dell. That's okay. Todd will edit that out in post. That's
daughter
fine.
Of Davis.
Paul Burka used to write about her in Texas Monthly in a mocking way. He referred to her as Yvonne as opposed to Yvonne. And I gather this is something that happens in the press corps, not just in Burka's own head, right?
Maybe it's Burka's own head.
His whole point was that every time she gets up at the mic...
I think I'm going to own that.
Every time she gets up at the mic to speak, your reaction is Yvonne. That was Burka's whole point, that she's a completely mystifying figure in the legislature in terms of how she conducts herself.
Yeah, she's really bright. She's really good at this stuff. But she has one of those voices that makes your... eyes twitch. I mean, she's just got one of those voices. When she goes to a microphone in the House, people kind of, you know, cringe a little bit.
Do you see
bit.
This coming? I mean, not that it matters.
No,
who
didn't
cares
see
who the head
coming.
Of the caucus
no.
is, but you didn't see it coming.
No, I mean, they've had a bunch of, you know, noise inside the caucus that, you know, sort of vaguely revolves around how powerful and how much of a spokesman Trey Martinez Fisher should be for the rest of the Democrats. And they alternately say, you know, depending on who you're talking to and the day and whatever he's talking about, it's alternately, well, we're not standing behind that guy. Well, I sure am glad he said that. And you know, he's kind of polarizing. And so... there was a move in the caucus to move the caucus in another direction. And so, you know, candidates were seen rightly or wrongly as TMF candidates. And, you know, I think that...
in theory, Yvonne Davis is not a TMF
right.
candidate.
Well,
correct.
Right. Okay. But if he was considered a polarizing figure, I mean, she's someone who sort of routinely torpedoes like, her
she's
own...
she's not exactly
well,
Mr. Rogers,
she torpedoes
right?
her own party and her own delegation at times from the back mic.
From what I'm hearing, I don't think she expected to be elected to anything. I think she was putting her name in order to
so
tilt the votes to
Elvis
somebody
Presley,
else.
So she's not Elvis Presley, she's Joe Strauss.
Well, right. I think she was tilting the votes to somebody else. And, you know, I think that...
they both like racetracks.
Right. So, very interesting. What you know?
Also, Yvonne Davis, Jewish. Did you know that?
What?
No, I'm just kidding.
You're saying it with a very
wow.
serious.
Todd will edit that out in post.
That was
also.
That was a Joe Strauss joke.
Sort of. It was like they have a lot in common.
The question is going to be who is sort of the you know the person at the mic for the Democratic Party going forward, and you know I guess we'll find out.
Chris.
It would be unusual for Yvonne Davis to regularly appear. behind a microphone.
And that's why she's the leader and not the chair.
Maybe. And also, I don't know. Brandon Creighton is her equivalent on the Republican side. Well, they'll get along very well, right?
Is he not Turner's equivalent?
Who can figure this out?
You know, we were very excited to do this sort of side-by-side, you know, interview until we learned that Yvonne Davis was
would
the one
Creighton
who
have talked to us?
Everybody will talk to us.
Sure,
except Yvonne Davis.
Yvonne Davis.
Sure she will.
When was the last time
why don't you have Chris Turner? I don't understand.
She's the spokesman for the party now. Let's go try.
Emily, when are you with Yvonne Davis?
I'm sure this podcast is helping.
How did you and Yvonne Davis get along when you were at the Dallas Morning News?
I mean, we got along fine when she would answer our questions. I think the only reporter she consistently talks to is probably Gromer Jeffers, who can make anybody talk.
Does the leader of either party matter that much in the House?
It does. I mean, that's the person who's going to be, you know, sort of the voice of when there's a partisan affair up. That's going to be the voice of the opposition.
But I like Jessica Farrar as much as anybody does. But how often was Jessica Farrar the voice of the party last time?
Two or three times. And this was one of the issues was that, you know, if you elect somebody to be the voice of your party and you continually jump in front of that person to talk, Mr. Martinez Fisher, then who's the leader here?
And I think Trey's going to punch you right in the nose.
Well, that's fine, but you know, I think that was the issue when they were electing a leader here, and you know, the question is going to be: are the Democrats going to speak through one voice, or are they just as fractured up as the Republicans are?
I wonder, Reeve, can you explain your selection of Representative Turner to do the podcast intro as opposed to Representative Davis?
Right. What are you, an anti-Semite?
Yeah. What's the deal?
The thinking was that
you see how I did that. You like that?
Wow.
The thinking was that I have heard that he listens to the Tripcast, and so that I knew he would be a quick, study on how the intro is done.
What does he have? Mono? He's shut in.
What's the drive here?
Why is he listening to the Tripcast?
He has to drive to and from Fort Worth.
Is he related to you?
And despite the discussion here, he was just elected chair of the Democratic Caucus, and I wanted to acknowledge that by having him do an introduction.
I think we should get to the bottom of this leadership. This would be a great text-plainer.
We asked Julian to figure it out yesterday.
I don't know. Get Boris on this thing, actually. He'll love it.
No one knows who you're talking about. I don't think this makes for a great podcast. We should move on to a voice people are actually listening to, which is the governor of the state.
You know, if they listened to the governor, then we would have sold the lottery 4 or 5 years ago and used the money to start a fund for education and insurance premiums for the poor.
And that's exactly what we did.
Also, wouldn't topless dancers be teaching third grade or something like that? Isn't that right?
I mean, you know, it's always interesting to hear what sort of the governor's program is, but they kind of
school.
The legislature routinely ignores big chunks of these things.
So. It doesn't matter because according to public policy polling, Bill White's going to beat him in 2014. So
well, you know, Kay Bailey Hutchison was relying on that polling firm, I think, when she jumped into the governor's race.
That is the nuttiest poll I've ever seen.
That's great.
It's nutty.
Can you explain a little bit more?
There's a PPP poll. This is a left-leaning North Carolina-based pollster. Right. Exactly. It's ordinarily the peephole, but I'm stuttering.
Left-leaning, but he's also consistently gotten his numbers right over the years.
Well, those things aren't mutually exclusive. He is a liberal.
They got some numbers pretty wrong in Texas.
He ran trials in 14, Perry against four Democratic candidates for governor potentially: Bill White, Wendy Davis, Anise Parker, and Julian Castro. White actually beat Perry in the poll, 47-44. He beat Castro and then Davis and then Parker by small margins, increasing. Parker was the widest gap. No sign that Anise Parker intends to run for governor. It's just he tested
or Bill her. White or Wendy
Bill
Davis
White.
Or,
you know. And Julian Castro is announcing on February 2nd for re-election for mayor, so that's not going to happen. Abbott,
we should have done Yvonne Davis.
Abbott,
if you read Politico, Wendy Davis is
the bomb, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Abbott beat all of them by a larger margin, and Abbott was not leading Perry, but among the people who had knowledge of Abbott. Like Abbott's name ID was only like 56%.
Right.
But among those 56%, he was beating Perry significantly. It's a crazy poll, and it doesn't matter.
It's way too early. Nobody started advertising.
But so to the state of the state, I was in Las Vegas avoiding vomit on the strip for the last 2 days, and so I had to watch the state of the state on our website last night. The governor seemed to make some news, actually, right? It was not a routine speech.
He spent a ton of money. He spent $3.7 billion he asked them to set aside for water and
combination of water and transportation.
Transportation.
He didn't divide that up. He didn't endorse the $2 billion versus the $1 billion specifically.
Right.
He took
$1.8 billion from rainy day and said, let's use that for tax relief if the legislature approves it. And then he said, let's take $1.3 billion out of Fund 6, the state's highway fund, and instead of giving that to the Department of Public Safety, let's give that to transportation. And DPS can get its money. They're not proposing a cut to DPS. DPS can get its money somewhere else.
Yeah, I wonder
if you look
that.
At this. Wait 1 second.
Yeah, go
through this. If $7 billion there, and then the supplemental appropriations bill to fix the current budget is going to be $7 billion, something
or
like
more.
That.
Or more.
Now you're at $14 billion. You're playing with the spending cap already, and you haven't put any money back into education. You haven't done any of these
other
things.
Well, for one thing, we don't yet have a ruling on whether the funds out of the rainy day fund impact the spending cap. That's obviously something that's in play.
The people who wrote it say that it was not intended to count against the spending cap, but the people at the OBB, at the House Appropriations, and at Senate Finance, I'll say it clearly does count.
Well, we're going to have Tommy Williams and Jim Pitts tomorrow, and that'll be, if not question number one, then question number two.
Right.
But so on the fund diversion thing, everybody talks about, oh, we have to take the money that was coming in for a purpose and make sure it goes to that purpose. My question is, if you do that, all you're doing is redirecting money away from something else that theoretically still needs to be funded. So it's not that somehow being honest about where funds are supposed to go saves you any money.
Well, that's why Tommy Williams is saying it's going to take a while to do this, because you do get these things where the money's being diverted to something. So if you're going to take the money and say, don't divert it, spend it on what you said you were going to spend it on, then you have to, A, spend money on those things that you weren't spending it on. That's a new expenditure. And you have to make up the money in the place where you took it away. So
right.
But so there's something to be said for truth in budgeting, right?
If you did it honestly and you had the money and you just said, okay, fix this, you basically would increase the size of the budget by about $5 billion. They say the diversions amount to about $5 billion.
The truth in budgeting is don't pretend that redirecting money back to the place it originally was supposed to go saves you money, because it doesn't.
So suddenly the places where it's been diverted from would have their money. So, you know, flowers grow there,
right? But that would mean an increase in the budget.
Right.
So how does this jive with anything that Perry has been saying over the last few years with regards to the rainy day fund and you know, what money's going to get saved and what money's going to get spent? He said yesterday, you know, well, once you get to a point where you have this much in the bank, you know, you should start to spend it.
It's mostly one-time expenditures. So he's kind of sticking to his line that you shouldn't use the money in the state's savings account for continuing expenses. But he is setting up a couple of things that could be continuing expenses. If you do the tax refunds or tax breaks in the way that he's talking about on his website, they're talking about things like, would you rather lower the sales tax by 0.25%? Would you rather lower the business margins tax rate? Would you rather do this? Those are all ongoing expenses.
Yeah.
So you would come in and say, here's $1.8 billion from rainy day, and we're going to apply it to these tax breaks. And then 2 years from now, you'd go, do we continue the tax break? Are we on the hook for $1.8 billion? Can't go back to the rainy day fund. Now you're spending out of general revenue again.
This theory also about, you know, returning over-collected taxes to taxpayers. I mean, how does that work, and how often does that even happen?
You know, Perry tried to do this a couple of years ago. He said, you know, we have this money in the rainy day fund. We should refund. We should do a tax refund. Mm-hmm. And they looked at it, and it turned out to be unconstitutional, and the problem with it politically was that if you collect rainy day fund money, generally collect it from the energy industry, you can't refund it to somebody else. So, you know, you're in the political situation saying, I'm going to give the energy industry a big refund. It's like, okay, back up.
Yeah, right.
Never mind.
Yeah.
Texas doesn't have a personal income tax, so tax refunds are very difficult to give to individuals, because if you were in a state with a personal income tax, you'd just say, deduct it here on line 78 and, you know, go on with your life. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to get a tax refund at the state level to individuals, because the main state tax individuals pay is the sales tax, and it's not tracked.
I found it fascinating yesterday that almost all of the speech was focused around budgeting and higher education, and that social issues were largely completely absent.
And public education, K-12 education.
Yeah. I mean, there was no conversation about, despite his, you know, big abortion
Where
speech
was the
this
fetal
weekend,
pain
there was no
stuff,
fetal pain.
Right?
There were no emergency items around that. He did not mention the words immigration or border once. There was no talk about guns, you know, which...
Well, he did talk about health care, as I've said previously, I'm not creating
not,
an insurance exchange,
right,
and I'm not going to expand Medicaid. So back to the budgeting question. Okay, Governor, you still have almost 6 million people, 23% of the population, uninsured.
Right.
So you're not going to expand Medicaid, and you're not going to create an insurance exchange. We know what you're opposed to. What are you for? What are you going to do? Are you going to take the position, as Kelly Hancock and Diane Patrick did to me in Arlington on Friday, that the answer to our health problem ought to be that they should just give us the money without any strings. It's our money.
But that's never
they should
happen.
Give it to us. With no disrespect meant to them, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, they wouldn't do that to public schools, for example.
So the government's not going to simply give you a cartoon bag of money with a dollar sign on it because you insist. So in the absence of that, the governor wants to spend money on all these things. Well, what are you going to do about the 6 million people who are uninsured if you're not going to do these things? So I want to understand how this math adds up.
Well, I think, you know, the Emily knows this better than I do, but the hospitals and the doctors are going to jump into this and say, wait a minute, this is economic development for us. This is actually our economics. And the way this is working is breaking a lot of hospitals. I mean, you know, this emergency room care as primary is really,
most
really, really
expensive. Most expensive and least efficient.
Well, it's just, and it's messing up the hospital's economics. It's messing up doctor economics. And, you know, the reason so many doctors, one reason that so many doctors don't accept Medicaid payments and these kinds of things is because they don't cover the costs of providing the service.
So the only money he wanted to put into healthcare yesterday in that speech was to support the Eddie Lucio Memorial Hospital, right?
Right. So I still think that the
or med school.
Well,
higher ed in South.
Technically,
Texas.
What he said he encouraged the lawmakers to corral the 2/3 votes necessary to
take money out of the
give make the permanent university fund money. To schools in South Texas.
And
I mean, really, specifically...
Including the medical school.
Can explain what that money is and who it goes to now.
Well, Permanent University Fund is this sort of large, what's like more than $9 billion pot of money.
It's the original land grant for...
Yeah, that right now only some schools in the UT system and A&M system can get, and they have to have constitutional approval to tap that money. Right now, the only schools in the UT system that can't get it are their South Texas schools, UT Brownsville and UT Pan American.
So this University of the Americas, whatever they're going to try to do, this combine.
Well, the plan to make them – to if you were going to give an existing school a access, then you would have to do a constitutional amendment that would require a vote of the public. But the way the statute is written, a new school, when the new school is created, you can just do a 2/3 vote and give them access.
Of both houses.
So it's easier to just – turn UT Brownsville and UT Pan American into a new university that's combined and give that new university access.
So the governor wasn't talking – I may have misspoken then. The governor was not talking about taking money out for the medical school?
No.
Well, the medical school will be part of this new university.
Then, and then you could apply
and
some PUF money.
That's part of the plan is that in order to build the medical school, they need the PUF money. So it's all connected. And yes, so basically he said, I want you to give them – access to the PUF so that they can build this new university and have this med school down there.
The UT Austin Medical School, the part of the reason everybody said that it came together so fast was also because it had permanent university fund dollars attached with it, which was a bonus that South Texas didn't have.
Right. And South Texas's taxing capacity is not what Travis County
so
says
without
as well.
Without the same taxing capacity and without permanent university fund dollars, it was at a big disadvantage.
Yeah, in fact, as we speak, a bunch of the university presidents and students and administrators are all on buses heading towards Austin to sort of have Rio Grande Valley Higher Education Day at the Capitol today.
Call it Hogwarts. That'd be great.
So the governor has gotten kind of spendy. Right?
It was $7 billion. It was a lot of money. He was very spendy.
And how does he explain this sudden change of heart? I thought we had a spending problem.
There's a bunch of money in the rainy day fund. There's a bunch of, they're calling, the first thing they're doing is they're calling a surplus the amount of money they left in their checking account because they estimated wrong and they didn't fully fund their budget. They left this giant hole in Medicaid. They left a giant hole in education. They did a bunch of these, accounting tricks. And they got to the end of it and they said, how about that? We need 5 more months of Medicaid and all of this other stuff, about $7 billion.
That's about the amount we have in the surplus.
We have about $8.8 billion left. So, but they've got the appearance of a surplus for a moment. Until the supplemental bill's done. Yep. And then they've got this ton of money, thank the leprechaun named the Eagleford Shale, for about a $12 billion balance that they expect to have at the end of the rainy day fund, which is a lot of money. And they're looking at it and going, let's spend some of that. And everybody...
So what is the mechanism for that revenue if there's a cap on the size of the rainy day fund?
Right.
What happens if more money flows into what would have been the rainy day fund, but they hit the cap?
Where's
that money go?
It flows into GR.
Okay, fine.
So what should we make of the fact that there, like Emily mentioned, there weren't a lot of social issues in this red meat? Does that indicate anything for 2014, 2016?
Every time he makes a big sort of social issue speech, the first thing everybody says is, oh, running for president. So what are we to make of the fact that on this big platform, we weren't the only ones live streaming this. CNN was live streaming this.
For Texas, what are we to make of it for Texas or for Perry?
They were tweeting about, and I couldn't believe. Let's examine the timing here.
Yeah. Let's say that you propose in your State of the State speech that $1.8 billion be taken out of the rainy day fund for tax relief if the legislature approves it and voters say yes. So if the legislature approves it, then that constitutional amendment would go on the ballot in November of this year, 2013.
So that's how that has to work. They just can't give the money without.
No, you've got to have the mechanism. So the voters would go to the polls in November and say, yes, I want a tax break, vote that in, and they would start getting a tax break sometime in December, January, or February, and then we would have March primaries for governor and for legislature. And I mean, you know, it's a nice piece of politics. You know, they set up a thing where, you know, you vote for a tax break, you go back and reward the people who gave you the tax break.
To Emily's point, do you not think that social issues are going to come up in the legislature and that the governor is going to be very pleased to receive those bills on his desk? I do.
But he hasn't made any emergency items. I mean, he hasn't made fetal pain an emergency item.
Or, for that matter, school choice.
But he did talk about school choice.
But he didn't make it an emergency item.
He did lead that right to life rally just a couple days before the State of the State. So maybe you thought, I've done that. I don't need to mention it here.
Yeah, but normally on a platform like that, this is the first State of the State I can remember where there has been so little mention of social issues.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's
noteworthy. I just don't think it's conclusive.
Well, and they're talking fiscal issues, and they're presumably talking to fiscal conservatives, but, you know, a couple of those groups have come out and said, you know, we like what the governor's proposed about giving taxes back and stuff, but we don't support this raid on the rainy day fund. It's like it's become this sacred object.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it's, if we're going to say that this isn't meaningful, that he, you know, avoided all those issues, then we have to say it isn't meaningful next time he, you know, gives one of these really, you know, charged.
Next time there are social issues.
Right. I mean, because maybe he's not posturing for anything. Maybe.
It's interesting that he doesn't have any emergency items, that he hasn't picked anything to, you know, because a governor can dominate
the
agenda
in
this first 60
days. He could in 5 minutes, right?
He could in 5 minutes. All he's got to do is, you know, write a letter.
Email. Yeah.
Right.
Well, the speculation I heard was that this sort of signaled a sort of lying low, shoring up the conservatives with money, the business people who have money that would donate to a potential presidential run down the line.
A liberal would ask that question.
is that a Dewhurst joke?
No, I'm just going to say that every podcast now.
If you go to the governor's,
I'm not
website,
talking about you. I'm talking about Ross.
if you go to the governor's website and look at this tax thing they've put up, it's basically if you got a tax break, what tax would you like to get? And a whole bunch of it's business taxes. And I think this may be right. I think he's going for the business community, and you know, let's solidify the establishment. Because Perry's strong with the conservative part of the Republican Party. It's probably the establishment that he needs to get back. Mm-hmm. Particularly if he's going to raise money for a federal campaign.
There, so you can read between the lines on that speech.
Right.
There you go.
So are you willing to say that the lack of social issues does matter then?
No. He's not running for governor anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Anything else to take away from? Obviously, for me, you mentioned he talked about higher ed a lot, and he sort of just repeated his platform that he went around the state promoting.
Four-year tuition freeze.
Right, and it sounds like everyone's saying in the bill that House Higher Education Chairman Dan Branch has filed on this is that four-year tuition freeze would be a required option that universities have to have.
That's really what they're pushing. Jumbo shrimp. What does that mean?
Option. Yeah, that's exactly
very,
right.
Vaguely oxymoronic.
They want universities to be required to offer this as an option for students. So they're not going to require a tuition freeze, but they will require universities to offer it.
So if I go to UT and I say, I want you to tell me right now what it's going to cost for these 4 years and you can't have any more money from me, they're going to do a different rate card effectively for me than they would for the average person who comes in the door and says, I'm a riverboat gambler. I want to bet that my tuition is not going to go up more than I don't like.
Right. You can either freeze it at a rate that's probably higher than today's rate. Right. If today it's a dollar, maybe it's a dollar 20, but it holds for all 4 years. Right.
So I'm willing to bet that $1.20 is a good deal.
Right.
That it's not going to stay at a dollar the whole time.
Right. Right.
And famously, you know, the examples that people cited after he first started talking about this in the fall were UT Dallas, which has a 4-year fixed tuition for everyone, and it's the most expensive public university in the state. And then UT El Paso, which is one of the cheaper universities, has the option of a four-year fixed tuition, and almost none of the students use it. They just don't like it because they don't – they are more sort of like pay-as-you-go.
Well, and UTEP has a really large population of 6- and 7-year graduates. I mean, you know, they've got a lot of people.
She's running a local train rather than an express train.
Right.
So the schools are different. There's a feeling that the 4-year fixed tuition might not work for every school, but they want to have that predictability option for everyone. That's really what they're pushing. It's not
has the Thunderdome aspect of the fight over higher ed dissipated with Chairman Seliger in that chair now? It doesn't seem as much of a fist fight.
Well, we haven't even started having committees on it yet. I mean, we had the finance committee where universities were talking about how they
want
money.
Right, but you know, it's not about – I mean, yes, of course, there's plenty of time for this. But doesn't the mood seem more groovy kind of –
You think Seliger's on drugs?
Oh, boy.
Is that what you're saying? Who's
Evan's stuck in the 70s.
No.
Flower power, dude.
Yeah.
I was at the Flamingo the last couple days.
Hey, man.
No,
wearing a tie-dyed undershirt.
I mentioned Diner. I mean, I'm obviously not of this earth anymore. Seriously, doesn't it seem...
Barry Levinson was just a boy.
He was, right. Doesn't it just seem to you like things are...
People are less crabby.
I think this session doesn't have the drama walking in that the last couple of sessions did.
That's what I'm asking. He said it better.
We didn't have a genuine speaker's race. There wasn't really a real tussle for power at the beginning. There's not a super pressing issue, or rather the super pressing issue, school finance, isn't going to land during the session. It's going to land later. And I think everybody's sort of like, you know, let's just keep it on the low down for now.
The appointments have mostly been sort of expected,
right,
you know.
Right.
They've got some money
in
their pocket.
House this week.
Everything's a little less stressful when you got some cash in your pocket.
But for higher
and things are better.
For higher education, the thing to watch is a bunch of regents on multiple boards are cycling off. Technically at the end of this week, but they don't necessarily have to happen at the end of this week. They could happen anytime starting at the end of this week. And so when the new regents come
on, governor appoints,
theoretically, things could bubble up again.
When the governor appoints Ted Nugent.
My blood brother.
And Chuck Norris.
Right.
Janine Turner to the UT regents. Those are his three picks. When that happens, things will get a little bit less groovy.
Well, that sounds pretty
groovy.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, from a journalism standpoint, that's like Christmas every day, right?
Yeah.
I'd love
those
that.
Are some meetings
like
I would go to.
Those, by the way, I am endorsing right now those three choices for
UT
regions.
I didn't know
we
started making endorsements.
Only in this case will I make an exception.
All right. Well, if anyone out there has any endorsements for the regents, you can send them to the governor's office or to, what is it, tribcast@texastribune.org? Anyone know? That sounds good. On behalf of, or questions or comments, not just regential endorsements.
But we prefer the regional endorsements.
And if Yvonne Davis has any problem with the way we've discussed her tenure
if she's
as the leader of this
celebrity
caucus,
intro.
E. Ramshaw at
E. Smith,
businessasusual.org. What?
You didn't want to give out the actual one, huh?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, sort of chickened out there.
See, I zigged when I was supposed to zag.
All right. On behalf of Evan, Emily, Ross, and our producer, Todd, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
Hashtag vomit obstacle course.